Today's scripture reading comes from Psalm 28, verses 6 and 7. Blessed be the Lord, because he has heard the voice of my supplications. The Lord is my strength and my shield. My heart trusted in him, and I am helped. Therefore, my heart greatly rejoices, and with my song I will praise him.
Good morning. It is so good to be with you. This is actually the third time that I've been here. I came by myself, or actually with my father the first time I came, and then the last two times Haley and I have been able to come together. It's been interesting to hear the reports from other places and to see how similar some of the things are. And one of the pictures, I don't know if you noticed this, but the guy had his foot on the person's legs he was baptizing, and I was thinking, well, that's what we do in East Africa as well. And then he was talking about the cell phones and the mud huts and that kind of stuff. And you'll see the Maasai people in East Africa come out, and they'll have the newest iPhone as they're living in a mud hut with a lot of cows. And then one of my favorites was whenever the brother was talking about the ties. And in East Africa, they always tell you it doesn't matter if you're actually smart as long as you look smart. So they like to wear ties, and that means you're smart. At least for a minute or two until they hear you speak, and then they might know otherwise. This morning, I want us to think about a very special passage in Mark chapter 14. It's a passage that I've come to really appreciate, and I think it will be beneficial for us to think about this morning. And oftentimes, we live in a world where when we say that we have done what we can, it almost implies disappointment. You know, over this past year, when I was in Tanzania, our football team at my high school finally began to win some games. They had always had a losing season maybe for the last 10 years or so. We were always terrible football team. They used to love to see us come to town because they know it was an easy win. And we would always get scheduled for the homecoming games because you know how people are. They want to win that game. And they made it to state this year. And they played in the championship game, and they got stomped and lost by like 30 points. And everybody on Facebook, which you know how Facebook is, was saying, oh, we're so proud of you. You did what you could. You'll watch movies, and there will be doctors, and he's meeting with families, or she's meeting with families, and they say, sorry, we did what we could. But Jesus, whenever he says these words, this is not what he's implying at all. He's actually congratulating or commending a lady for what she did. So this morning, I want us to think about that in light of Mark chapter 14, verses 3 through 9. As we think about this text this morning, I want us to all realize that we're given opportunities. And some of us have a greater faith advantage or faith opportunity than other people do. As the brother was talking about the prison ministry, I was thrilled to hear that people are supporting a work like that. And let me explain why. I come from a family that is not a family of faith, as we might would call it. I have brothers and sisters who have been in prisons, who have done terrible things, who I wished somebody would have spread the gospel to them and perhaps changed their lives. And whenever I think about Mark 14, it's really contrasting two different people. You have this unnamed lady, and you have Judas. And you have one who has a great faith advantage, who has a great social standing, who has all the opportunities and privileges that one might want. And then you have this other lady in a culture who really could care less about ladies. She had no opportunities before her other than a family inheritance. And she gives it all at one time. So all of us are given opportunities, and it's up to us to make the decision of whether or not we're willing to sacrifice or to scream waste. And as a missionary, I get to meet and talk with a lot of elders, a lot of deacons, a lot of preachers, a lot of members. And I think one of the biggest things that we run into is there's always one elder who thinks supporting mission work is a big waste. And one of my favorite places to go is in Mark chapter 14. And this morning, to have such a day as this, I know that you take mission work very seriously. And all the missionaries appreciate that very much. Recently, I was reading an article, and I like to follow news. Being like 8,000 miles away, it's always interesting to see how tainted the news can be. And I read a report about Kim from North Korea, and I can't really say his name that well, so I'm just going to call him Mr. Kimmy for the next few minutes. And I read that he had been wasting his money on ski resorts and cars and nuclear weapons, and now he doesn't have any money and he's hurting, and people think that he's going to go to the Olympics to try to get more money and that kind of stuff. And my question for his situation was this: what's next for him? What's next for him? I think about a guy at the congregation I used to preach at. He betrayed his entire family. He literally sold their inheritance and sold their cows and even sold their house from underneath them without them knowing it. What's next for a family like that? And in Mark chapter 14, when we begin to read about this lady, and she gives what I think is her entire inheritance all at one sitting. What's next for a lady like that? When you look at the book of Mark, it's interesting because it's written to a Roman audience, we think, and it's ultimately written to a group of people who have no concern for Christianity other than to extinguish it or to get rid of it because they don't want to be threatened in any way. And you know, as Mark is writing this, what do you say to people who have no desire to hear what you're going to say? Well, most of us can relate to that, can't we? We have friends and family members who we have a desire to spread the gospel to them, but they have absolutely no desire to hear what we're going to say. But Mark decides in chapter 1, verse 1, he says, I'm going to tell you about the good news, whether you want to hear it or not. But the interesting thing to me in the gospel of Mark is that the outsiders are the ones who show the greatest faith. Most of you have been sitting on pews for many, many years. Just for the sake of doing this, how many of you have been Christians 20 years or longer? I want you to look at this. Keep your hands up for a second. And look around and see how many people who have been Christians for 20 years or longer. In other words, what I'm saying is you have a faith advantage. You have greater opportunities than perhaps someone who has not been a Christian, who did not grow up in a Christian family. And it's Mark chapter 14 that's going to talk to those type of people. And Mark chapter 5, leading up to Mark chapter 14, I love this passage because it shows exactly what we're talking about, how these insiders have the faith advantage, but it's the outsiders that end up showing the greatest faith. And in Mark chapter 5, you can begin reading this. Let's pick up in verse 5. It says this: constantly, night and day, he was streaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gashing himself with stones. Seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him and shouted with a loud voice. He said, what business do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God, do not torment me. So you have this unclean spirit that shows a faith advantage. It shows faith in Jesus as the Son of God. It's a very interesting story, and we don't have time to talk about it in great detail this morning. But it just goes to prove the point. In Mark chapter 14, beginning in verse 3, let's read it together. While he was in Bethany, let's stop there for a second. Bethany. I've done some research on Bethany, and it's a place where most people think that the sick people lived. I come from a place called Cornersville, and everybody, when we'd go to places, they'd call it Cornsville. And it's quite embarrassing because, no, I don't come from a ville of corn. It's Cornersville. There's quite a difference. But can you imagine coming from a city where it's known to be a place to breed sick people? And this is where you go when you have a problem. And interestingly, it's right outside the city. At the house of Simon the leper. Now notice, not only was he in Bethany, the place where sick people are, but he's at the house of a leper, or at least one who used to be a leper. He's reclining at the table, and there comes a woman with an alabaster vial of very costly perfume of pure nard, and she broke it and poured it over his head. This is a culture where this would have been socially wrong. Men are eating at the table, and this woman comes running in, and she's going to interrupt this great feast. And not only interrupt a great feast, but interrupt the King of Kings. in Bethany at the house of a leper. Verse 4. Some were remarking to one another, "Why has this perfume been wasted?" What a question. This lady, unnamed lady, now I think Mark does that for a reason. Comes, and she offers the best thing that she has. What I think was her entire inheritance. Her family's inheritance. All in one sitting. And when she breaks this, she breaks it in totality. Meaning there's no going back and redoing it or trying to save some or anything like that. And these some were most likely the closest followers of Jesus. And what do they say? Why has this been wasted? You have a lady who does not have a faith advantage or a faith opportunity, perhaps, like some of us have had. And the ones who had the greatest opportunity to do what she did instead ask a very ridiculous question. Why has this been wasted? And then they begin to explain themselves. And isn't that what we do in the church? When we disagree with somebody, we ask a question like this. Well, this money is being wasted on mission work, sending it everywhere in the world. And then we began to make excuses. We began to come up with certain things to try to support our position. And this is exactly what they do. This perfume might have been sold for over 300 denarii and the money given to the poor. And notice this, they were scolding her. Can you imagine what's going through all these people's minds? This lady, she runs into the room and she does this. And she's thinking, wow, I've done a great thing for Jesus. And then what Jesus is thinking, wow, this lady has done a great deed to me. And those that Jesus had worked with for 3 years are the ones who say, waste. They're the ones who scold her, as the text says. And Jesus says, leave her alone. Why do you bother her? She has done a good deed to me. For you always have the poor with you, and whenever you wish, you can do good to them, but you don't always have me. And notice verse 8, and I think this is the key to this text. She has done what she could. And this morning, in the next few minutes, I want us to focus on this idea a bit more. Have you done what you can? I don't know of a congregation that has done as much mission work as this congregation. And when I say that, I mean that. Because as I was hearing the reports this morning and seeing these numbers thrown out, I was just thinking, how many millions of people has this congregation alone helped spread the gospel to? It'd be interesting. I don't know how long you've been doing these Mission Sundays, but to figure out how many years you've been doing this and figure out how many people, roughly, that you've been able to reach. And I know it's about more than numbers, but those numbers represent souls, and that's what we all care about. Let's talk about some of the details of this. The first question I have in mind when I read Mark chapter 14 is why would Mark include this? You know, if you go back and you do some studying, it's talking about the return of Jesus, and then later on it's talking about the Lord's Supper. And maybe you wonder, well, what's the connection there? And that was my first question. What's the connection between what's before Mark 14, 3-9, and that which is after? And I think ultimately the answer to that is this is one of the greatest acts of service that anybody did to and for Jesus. I think this is in many ways one of the cornerstones of ministry. And you have a guy, a man, God in the flesh, who was in the process of doing everything he could for everyone. And it took an unnamed lady in the city of Bethany at the house of a leper to give something back to him. In verse 3, this unnamed lady Do you think Mark knew her name? You can read the other accounts of this, and people debate whether the other Gospels include the same story or whether it's a different account. But I'm reminded that some of the greatest service that one can do, they may get no recognition for it. We live in a world where you can get on Facebook and you can read about every single thing that a person does. You know, I really don't care that you get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and you take your shower and then you have your 20-minute Bible reading and then you ate a blueberry muffin and then you talked to your kid and then you walked your dog. You know, we put everything on there. And we're especially good at putting on Facebook what we do in the church. And for good reason. We like to spread that. But I'm reminded that when we had this attitude, it could be very dangerous. This unnamed lady who anoints the body of Jesus is not named in the Gospel of Mark, but still does one of the greatest selfless acts of ministry recorded in the entire Gospel. The second thing that's interesting to me is the cost of this perfume. If you figure it up, it's about a year's wages. And you know, a woman in this culture, in this society, in this day and time, would have not made a lot of money if she was able to find work. And for her to spend a year's wages is saying something. And my question is this, was there not a cheaper option? Could she not go to the local market and say, well, I have this perfume and it's about 1 year's wages. And I see that you have this perfume and it's worth about 2 months to 3 months' wages. So I'm going to make a trade. And in Tanzania, we're real good at making trades like this. And in Tanzania, when you make a trade, you always make a trade with at least two or three items because you get a better deal that way. You don't just do a one-for-one exchange. But she could have easily traded this one-year perfume for a two-month value perfume, and then she could have kept 10 months for an inheritance of value and then gave Jesus the 2 months. I also find it interesting that Jesus says, you've done what you can. He didn't expect 2 years' wages. He could have said, well, I'm the King of Kings. I'm Jesus. I'm the Son of God. Could you not give me 2 years' wages? But I think I'm perhaps most shocked by the response of those closest to Jesus in Mark chapter 14. They displayed a poor attitude. They were negative and very selfish. And perhaps this morning the greatest lesson for you is that our service has meaning. When we support ministry throughout the world, spreading of the good news, perhaps we feel sometimes as if we're doing something very small. And did you notice what Jesus says here? Wherever the gospel goes, this lady's going to be talked about. This morning, as we looked at the PowerPoint slides, there's websites with your name on it, and you're not doing it for your own glory. But wherever the gospel goes, as you support it and you pray for it, it's done in memory of your sacrifice. And I'm also reminded that opportunities are short-lived. You know, this lady, she could have thought about it a little longer. She could have went and talked to her friends and said, hey, what do you think about this opportunity I have? But a lot of the opportunities we're given in the Lord's church are short-lived. It's we either do it or we don't. And it's up for us to decide whether we're going to do it. I want to go to James chapter 2. And this was referenced this morning, and I love this passage in James chapter 2. Beginning in verse 14. And James asked one of my favorite questions in the entire Bible. What use is it? I want you to think about what you're doing today. Let's just be honest. Some of you are going to give a great amount today. Some of you will even give so much that it'll put your own self in a bad situation maybe. What use is something like a missions day have? And I think this is a question that we need to ask more often in the church. What use is it? If I'm going to go and serve the homeless, what use does it have? If I'm going to preach to those in the prison, what use does it have? If I'm going to go and preach and teach at a preaching school in Tanzania, East Africa, what use does that have? My brothers and sisters, if someone says he has faith, but he has no works, can that faith save him? My question for you today is this. Not only have you done what you can, but can the faith that you currently have save you? If a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, "Go in peace, be warmed and be filled," and yet you don't give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? Notice he asks this question two times. And when I read this, I think about a situation I was putting in just the other day. I was at Walmart. And in my hometown, we have a Bojangles, and nobody ever goes to the Bojangles because when you go there, it takes like 30 minutes to get your food. So there's always one or two cars there. And I saw this homeless guy holding up his sign, and I drove past him and said, "Man, I bet he's got a car parked over there at the Bojangles, and he's just taking advantage of people. He's got nice clothes on. I'm sure he has a nicer car than we do. We don't need to help this guy." And James 2 serves as a wake-up call that we need to quit being so abrasive, so rough, and perhaps have a tender heart. And in verse 17, "Even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead, being by itself." I love this because what James says, and this is something everyone can understand, when you go to the funeral home, that body is useless. It's dead. It's laying there. Has no good purpose. And that's the way he compares our faith to if we don't get out of the pew and do something. You know, God does not want us to give 1 year of wages. He wants us to do what we can. And that's different for every single person here. On your website, and I always like to do this because, you know, I'm not good at technology, but I'm real good at stalking people on there. So it's a lot of fun. This is what you say. Simply put, our mission is to seek and to save the lost. And as a congregation, you're doing that. But I want to ask you on an individual level, are you doing personally what you can? And then I began to look, and you have a list of the ways that you serve. Worship, Bible classes, care groups, family ministry, ladies classes, retreats, youth program, food pantry, local outreach, foreign missions. And again, I asked you, have you done what you can? And ultimately, Mark chapter 14 and James chapter 2 is about lives being changed. When we do what we can, lives will be changed. I think of a guy named Matthew. I was supposed to go to the city of Karatu, and I did. I began to study the Bible with several people, and I ran out of time to study with Matthew. So I traveled back to Arusha, and the next day a conference was starting, so I wasn't able to go back and study with Matthew. And I got a phone call that saying Matthew was going to come an hour and a half and spend 20,000 shillings to come study the Bible with us. Now let me remind you, in Tanzania, the average person makes around 7,000 to 8,000 shillings a day. So you're talking about at least 2 days' wages, maybe even closer to 3 days' wages for this guy to come and study the Bible. Now how many of you would be willing to give 2.5 to 3 days' wages to go study the Bible? Very few of us. And Matthew got there, and he was a Pentecostal preacher. We taught him the truth, specifically two guys from Wisconsin that were taking a trip there. And Matthew came up out of the watery grave of baptism fist pumping. And I've never seen anything like that. This guy was thrilled to be a Christian. And he understood the difference between the Pentecostal church and the church of the Bible. And Matthew, like a lot of other people, said, "I'm going to go home and I'm going to tell my family about this." And this is what we hear all the time. Matthew goes home and things are quiet for about 3 to 4 weeks. And I get a phone call. And a guy named Jeremiah says, "We need to go to Mongolia." I said, "Where?" You know, I didn't know where Mongolia was. And he said, "It's a rough ride to get there." So, you know, when an African tells you it's a rough ride, you know that it's a rough ride. And we didn't have the bush taxi. We used my personal car, and I was cringing at every bump we hit. We drove all the way to Karate, which is about 3 hours, and then we drove 2 hours on this very, very rough, terrible road. And I got out of the car, and our car was circled by these crazy people running around it. And they had baboon skins on as clothes. They had a bow and arrows, and they were making a clicking noise. And I thought, I'm in the wrong place. I was the only Westerner there. I was with two other local guys, and I was pretty terrified. And I was thinking, man, Haley was asleep when I left. I didn't say I love you when I left, so I don't know if she's ever going to hear that again. But I was very terrified. And we went and looked at these people's houses, and they were living in a cave. And they were so excited to show me their bed. And their bed was impala or gazelle or some type of skin just laid there. And that was their mattress and also, I guess, their sheet. I don't know if you just fold it up over you if you get cold or not. And they began to tell me that when you're an honored guest, that you get to eat baboon or snake. And I was glad I was not their honored guest that day. And from there, after being very terrified, we traveled just a few kilometers away. We're driving in the middle of the desert, it looks like. And they said, all right, we're here. I get out, and I'm looking around. I began to hear singing. We walk and we walk, and there's around 40 people gathered under this African tree because Matthew went home and started a congregation. Lives are being changed. And maybe you wonder about how devoted or committed these lives are. And perhaps from time to time I wonder the same thing. We got there, and I drove back all the way to Arusha and came back the next week, and we studied the Bible with several people, and they'd already been studied with before. And they said, we want to be baptized. We know that we need to do it. It's time. Let's go. I said, great. Let's go take care of it. I said, it's a little bit of a walk. I said, well, how far? I said, well, it's not that far. Just let's go. So I was thinking, you know, it's not that far. I don't need water. So we began to walk and walk and walk, and I began to say, are we there yet? And I began to pant like a dog because it's in the hot African sun. I don't have sunscreen on. I didn't bring any water. I have my camera bag, my Allen Bible, which feels like it weighs 10 pounds most of the time. You know, it was a pretty rough walk. We're walking through cornfields, and one of them says, you know, the python lives about a mile from here. I'm thinking, what? We began to walk and walk and walk some more. And a total of 7.5 miles of walking was done for these people to be baptized. The reason I tell you that is not to brag on myself, because I was over there saying, are we there yet? I was tired. I was ready to sit down and say, well, y'all can finish the trip and I'll catch you on the way back. These people are devoted. They're passionate. They're much like the lady in Mark chapter 14 that is looking for opportunities for service. And they respond. So this morning, I've been somewhat short, but I think that it's pretty clear what the text is talking about. The question for all of us is, have we done what we can? We serve a God who has done what He can. And I think that's one of the greatest things that I appreciate about our Creator, is that He's not a God who is all talk, but He's a God who is willing to be in the flesh with people. He was willing to come to places like Bethany and to sit in the house of the leper and to be served by the unnamed lady. He did what He could. And the question for each of us this morning is, will we do what we can? It's appropriate to offer an invitation. Perhaps there are some here who have not named the name of Christ. You know, this is a big auditorium, but I don't think you have to walk 7.5 miles if you choose to do that. Maybe 7.5 steps and we'd love to help you with that. But for most of us, we've had faith. We've been Christians for a long time. My question to you is, can your faith save you? If you have a need, would you come as we stand and as we sing?